Hello and welcome to One-on-One with LAPA, the Legislative Analysis and Public Policy Associates podcast series, where experts discuss key issues and emerging topics in the area of public health and safety, substance use disorders, and the criminal justice system. LAPA is funded by a grant from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, Executive Office of the President. Neither the Office of National Drug Control Policy nor any other federal instrumentality operate, control, or are responsible for or necessarily endorse this podcast. I am Shan Kemper, Senior Legislative Attorney with LAPA, your host for today's podcast on the topic of effective and supportive treatments for persons in correctional settings who are dealing with a substance use disorder. Evidence shows that providing medication-assisted treatment to persons in jails or prisons is a crucial aspect of helping them recover from an SUD and returning them to society. But today we're going to talk about why how we do this is just as important as doing it. I'm honored to talk today to my guest, Daryl McGraw of Formerly Inc. Daryl is a community activist and the founder of Formerly Inc. and holds state certifications as an addictions counselor, recovery support specialist, and a criminal justice professional. He is also someone with lived experience who regularly uses his experience and expertise to consult with law enforcement, universities, policymakers, and behavioral health and addiction treatment facilities, all who are looking to expand their knowledge and expertise in the area of criminal justice reform. Daryl, thank you so much for joining me today.
Chan, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
I'm great.
Man, so excited to be here. Let's get it.
I am so grateful that you are here and we can jump right in with my first question. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Daryl?
Sure. Oh, that's easy. You're starting easy on me, right? All right. So yeah, so my name is Daryl McGraw, as you said. Yeah, I spent 10 years of my life in and out of the Department of Corrections, right? What we call like on the installment plan, meaning, you know, in and out. You know, I go in for a few years, come out, go back, make sure the food is still gross. You know, I'm in and out of prison. But one of the common denominators for me was the fact that I had a substance SUD, substance use disorder, right? And my drug of choice was crack cocaine and marijuana. So I realized through that, all through this cycling through, you know, I realized I did some extensive research, if you will, right? I realized that if I were able to remove substances from my life, would I still end up back in? So I kind of did an experiment. Would I end up back in prison? And, you know, I wrote a 5-year plan while I was in prison and I got out and I haven't used substances since May 7, 2007. And I haven't been in the back of a police car or incarcerated since then either.
So, congratulations, Joe.
Thank you. Thank you. So far, you know, by the grace of God, you know, I've been able to do that. But through that process, you know, I realized that, you know, there were some gaps in the system, right? You know, I have been in and out of prison, you know, for, like I said, 10 years, and I always had to start over. I always had to start over. And there was never like some system, you know, even though there's all this money out there, there wasn't a system to help me successfully transition back into the community. That was my responsibility. I had to depend on my family. I had to do the footwork. I had to do this. And I said, you know, okay, so I'm capable. You know, I got some skills, but what about the person that doesn't? I met a lot of people along my journey who don't have the same resources or skill set that I do. So this is why I created Formerly Inc. And Formerly Inc. is an organization that's fully staffed by incarcerated people. And our goal is to help individuals, number one, transition back into the community successfully. But not only get out, but stay out. But overall, then we started to see that there was a need for organizations. There's a lot of organizations that get funding, right? They get all this money, but they don't have a clue on how to help us get out and stay out. So then I started doing technical assistance and consulting work. And, you know, so I've been very fortunate to be able to help individuals and communities, you know, create successful reentry bridges from incarceration or even treatment facilities back into the community.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
I noticed that you mentioned, and it sounds like it's very important, criminal justice reform. Why? What does that mean to you and why is it important to you?
So criminal justice reform is huge to me. I mean, those of us, and you know, I encourage any of your listeners who have not seen the movie, the documentary 13th, to watch it, because once you've seen 13th, then you'll be familiar with why criminal justice reform is so important. When we understand that the current criminal justice system really was established and built off the foundation of slavery, then we realize that a lot of the tactics and all of the, you know, ramifications and all the spillover from slavery is embedded in the criminal justice system, whether it be the prison system, whether it be policing, whether it be courts, right? We need systemic change all the way around. And unfortunately, the people that suffer the most are Black and Brown people. You know, we make up the large percentage of people that are incarcerated, and we're the ones that suffer from this unjust system. So criminal justice reform, we were always saying that this needs reform. Many of my colleagues will say that we need to dismantle the system. And I agree, but I don't see that happening. So we have to just keep screaming for reform and changing it where we can, when we can.
How does medication for addiction treatment play into your beliefs about effective criminal justice reform?
Well, so medication-assisted treatment and MOUD is a wonderful thing. It's in the prisons, and you hear the conversations, many of where we met, you know, our conversations are putting this and implementing it, implementation into the prison systems, criminal justice system, right? So now we're getting medication for substance users in prison. That's a beautiful thing. And I you know, that, you know, to help those, because many of us go in with these issues of addiction. But I'd be remiss not to bring up the fact that, once again, you know, 13th will expose a lot of this, is that I'm a person of color, right? So I'm a Black man who had a crack addiction in the 90s, and there was no MOUD, right? There wasn't no medication-assisted treatment. The treatment was incarceration, right? So they were incarcerating Black and Brown people because of the same symptoms as someone with a substance use disorder today. And that was the answer. So many of us were incarcerated in the war on drugs was the answer. So now here we are in 2021, and we're hearing that, you know, we can't lock our way up out of this. We, you know, people are sick. This is a disease. And, you know, we need to address this a different way. Well, we also see the people that are mostly affected by opioid use disorder happen to be white people from the suburbs, right? So now the treatment is different. The treatment modality is different. It's no longer incarceration, it's more so medication. So for me, there's conflict, and I have to shed light on it, but I also recognize the fact that Black and Brown people can be helped through this process. And so therefore, because there's funding that is going into the prison system, there's funding that also is going into, you know, communities, and many of the people that I work with are not just focusing their dollars on medication assisted treatment. They're also focusing their dollars on substance use disorder as a whole. So therefore, those individuals like myself probably could receive some treatment instead of incarceration these days. Mm-hmm. So we have to take what we can get right now, if that makes sense.
No, I completely understand what you're saying. And I feel like, given the perceived inequity that you see, what are some best practices for creating a medication-assisted treatment program that is, I guess, two-pronged to the issues you raised? One, recognizing that it is not just white people who are impacted by the opioid crisis. And two, how are we making this supportive and empathetic and positive for anyone impacted by a substance use disorder?
Right. And, you know, for me, and that's a great question. Thank you, Chan, for asking it, because, you know, one of the things that I would encourage, and we don't get to talk about enough, is medicated assisted recovery. So I would talk about MAR, right? I would talk about that, because now we're talking about recovery, right? And a lot of times, because of the funding streams or who's at the table, the money is more talking about treatment than recovery. And I'm an advocate for recovery. So I'm going to talk about, you know, okay, so you're going to give this person medication assisted treatment, but let's talk about housing. Let's talk about employment. Let's talk about trauma. Let's talk about the things why I'm using drugs, not just treating the drug addiction, right? So we need to also treat the issues why people use, right? We need to talk about why people use more so than just treating the actual addiction, right? Because even if you give me medication for my OUD, right? That's cool, but I'm still homeless. I'm still unemployed. I still suffer from trauma. I still have some mental health issues that I'm struggling with that are unaddressed. So now I got this medication in me, and what used to help me survive or function, you just took that away from me because you gave me some medication. So now I'm hurting even worse because now I'm sober and still unemployed. At least, you know what I mean? So it's something that people like, you know, and then a lot of times these decisions are made by people who don't have the lived experience. So these conversations aren't had at the table, right? So if we're talking about funding, we need to talk about twofold: medication, and then how we're going to help these people transition into a better life.
Well, I think one of the things LAPA has a model act, the MAT Act, and it's a model template for policymakers and legislators going forward who want to implement medication for addiction treatment. And one of the sections we specifically talk about is what you just referenced. Like in the MAT Act, you are required as a government entity, if you have people coming out of prison who have been on medication for addiction treatment, you also have to ensure that they have the tools in place to help them, not just with getting medication, but trying to get them help in other ways. Because what you just said is very important. It's not just in the correctional setting, it's out of the correctional setting too.
Right.
And I really appreciate you sort of, you know, bringing that up. Have you seen places or are people you think are doing, are striving to do a really good job in terms of medication for addiction treatment programs or best practices on that you would suggest?
Of course, I got to shout my friends out in Rhode Island. They're doing a great job. You know, I got to shout them out, you know, that group, the ORN, right? They're doing a great job in helping people see their path, see the way, and at least holding forums where, you know, they have people with lived experience, and they'll also have providers and clinicians there, right? So I definitely see different states doing different things. I like what I see in Rhode Island. I like what I see in Mass. I even like what I see, you know, I sit at some tables here in Connecticut, and I like what I see. I always want to encourage that there should be more. And I also encourage the fact that, you know, we need to really look at the whole person and not just the addiction, because that's where I struggle at. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I really, really struggle with, we don't talk enough about, and I've seen this a lot, especially in the early implementation phases of MAT, was that, so a person could be in prison for 10 years, right? Hasn't touched a drug, hasn't touched anything, but they're on their way out. So someone has this idea that they need to put this person on MAT. And I struggle with that because, you know, and some of these people have been told that in order for you to be on parole or probation, you need to follow these instructions. So that becomes a part of their discharge planning, is that they're going to take this medication. Well, this person hasn't been involved in substance use in such a long time. So I think that, you know, we need to monitor. I think oversight is where I'm going, where are we doing this right? Right. Are we just checking the boxes and making sure that we got 50 people or 100 people on MAT? Or are we making sure that the people that really need it, who really need it, because some of those, that guy with 10 years, his issues are way past his issues are more about getting reintegrated back into the community. And that's where we come in at Formerly Inc. And that's what forensic peer support specialists, which I train across the country. That's what we're for, is to help that individual that's getting out deal with the overwhelming process of reintegrating back into the community, reintegrating back into family. Families are great. They want you home, but they don't know what you've been through. They don't know how to help you, you know, set these things up. And in the midst of COVID, it makes it even more challenging.
How has COVID impacted? Has it impacted you and Formerly Inc. and the work that you do and what you see in the substance use disorder recovery community?
Well, I think that, you know, we've been very fortunate, you know, to learn Zoom. You know, man, you know, I'm blessed to have internet and a computer, right? But many people that the impacted people that are getting out, they don't have these tools for us to interact with them. So I think that, you know, we still got to do boots on the ground work. I'm still getting phone calls. I still get texts. You know, I do a recidivism group for anybody that's gotten out. You've been out 10 years. You've been out day one. You chime in on my, we do a group every morning at 10, on Monday mornings at 10, and they can just get the Zoom link and they come in. I got guys walking around, they're in the park, they're on their phones.
Right. And
we're talking about normal day-to-day stuff. What are you going through? What do you need? Do you need these things? We do backpack giveaways. We partner with local organizations because we know there are advocates, you know, who I love, and that are advocating for release due to COVID. But what they're not advocating for is proper housing. They're not advocating for supplies. So me and my team and others have to be boots on the ground, and we got to like have these backpack pop-ups where we go to these places and we let the people know we're going to be at ShopRite, or we're going to be in this parking lot from 1 to 3. You could come there and get dry goods. You could come get toothpaste. You could come get socks. We got backpacks full of supplies, and then they come and they get the stuff and they go back to where they go, because a lot of times they're released from prison with nothing. So we have to be always thinking ahead of the game. And, you know, I want to shout out Haymarket People's Fund, who has been very generous with helping us in that process of helping others. You know, so I definitely wanted to say that, you know, there's organizations that help us get the bare essentials to the street, and they've been very essential with helping us as well.
Awesome. I have one final question. You mentioned peer support. You're also a peer support specialist.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You wear many, many hats. Can you talk a little bit about being a peer support specialist and why you think peer support is important?
Oh man, Chan, thank you so much. Because this is my thing. I'm sorry, we only have a couple minutes, but yo, peer support is essential to individuals, because we understand, we have that lived experience, but also we're trained. I train people, right, to connect, and connection is key. Anybody, you know, we talk about connection, we're connected with human beings. Human beings need that connection. You know, you get out, family members don't understand. Well, we get it. I get it. Yeah. And you got a daughter, you did 10 years. Now your daughter's 20, right? And you're trying to be a dad at 20. When you left, she was, you know, 10.
Right.
And how do you deal with that? And how do you deal with the boyfriend with the sack, the pants sagging down, or whatever the issues are, right? We try to work through that without you going back to prison. Right.
Right.
So, or just the overwhelming, I can't get a job because of my criminal record. Okay, don't worry about it. We're gonna work through that. You know, because what we do, and I'll just say this, peer support, a good peer support person understands how to utilize their story, but also take that person's story and mesh it into how they're living right now. So what did you do in prison when things didn't go your way? What did you do? And let's walk that back. So you didn't get your way in prison. You didn't wild out. You didn't go to the box, right? So you're not going to get your way out here, and I'm not going to let you wild out and get arrested, but we need to walk it through. So, you know, peer support is really about being there and that mutuality and being a giving person space and being there for that individual, you know, just, and then, you know, our role is multiple, right? When we're on teams, we also role model how people with lived experience. I was there and now I'm here. I stand
right,
on the board.
Right, right.
You know, we represent change. You know, we represent change, and we're people with that knowledge to say, this is why this will work and this is why this won't work. So our voice is very important at every table. And, you know, shout out to all my people that are doing peer support, recovery coaches, everyone that are out there doing a great job to try to save lives and keep people, you know, keep people free and healthy and alive. You know, there's a lot of work to be done, and we still got a lot of work to do, but we're out here everywhere. Superheroes, let's go.
I agree. I've met a lot of peer support specialists in my work on LAPA's Model Act on peer support certification, mm-hmm. and the community is amazing. I think you have to be a special person to be a peer support specialist and do that work.
Yeah, it's not for everybody. No doubt. It's not for everybody, but it is for the ones that you have to, you know, the requirement for to be a good peer support person, you have to been through some things, right? And a lot of our stories are, you know, not pretty, but we've learned to take that, what we've been through, and use it as a tool to help others get through their stuff.
You know, that's a great way of putting it.
It's a gift. It's a gift that, you know, to be chosen, right? To be chosen to do this work, man, it's an honor and a privilege.
Thank you so much, Daryl. What's the best way for people to contact you for questions or comments?
Yeah. So I'm everywhere. I'm on social media, Daryl McGraw on Facebook. If you're on a diet, don't follow me because I don't eat healthy. I got cheeseburgers and stuff dripping with cheese and bacon. I am at Harry Tubman. You can find me on Instagram, Harry Tubman 18. So that's Harry Tubman 18, like Harriet Tubman, but it's Harry Tubman 18 because we are on the modern day Underground Railroad. We're pulling people out of darkness. So I'm there. You also can reach out to me at Formerly Inc. 100 on Instagram. And I'm also at Formerly Inc. 100 on Clubhouse. So come through, man. Let's chop it up. Let's do it. I'm everywhere. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. And Chan's got my info. If you need it, hit me up. You know, I appreciate it. Thank you for the platform. Thank you for letting me, you know, use my voice. Hopefully we can help somebody today.
Thank you so much for being here today, Daryl. That's all the time we have for today. Please join us for the next One-on-One with LAPA, where we'll discuss another interesting topic. LAPA has also released a model state law on the implementation of medication-based treatment in correctional settings. If you would like to learn more about medication-based treatment for substance use disorders in correctional settings, log on to legislativeanalysis.org, that's one word, or contact LAPA at info@thelapa.org. Thank you.